ShareCare is the leading online health and wellness engagement platform, providing millions of consumers with a personal, results-oriented experience by connecting them to the most qualified health resources and programs they need to improve their health. It's time now for ShareCare Radio on RadioMD.com. Here's your host, Dr. Daria.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. Yes, it's Dr. Daria. First off, let's just mention today is World Health Day. The focus of that is going to be on food safety. So if you want to learn more, go to our ShareCare Facebook page. We have a lot of great information there for keeping your family safe with their nutrition. Next, I want to jump into a topic that's been on the news recently in the last week or so, and that was regarding Angelina Jolie and her decision to have her ovaries and fallopian tubes removed. I've gotten a lot of questions about this, and many people are wondering, is this a decision that's applicable for everyone? The reality is that it's a hugely personal decision, but let's get into the basics for it. So she was found to have a mutation called BRCA, BRCA1. Now, what is BRCA? It's a term used to describe the breast cancer susceptibility gene. So women who are positive for either BRCA1 or BRCA2 have a much higher risk of both breast and ovarian cancer. For instance, hers was 60% risk of breast cancer by the time she was 70 and a 40% risk of developing ovarian cancer. So definitely a high risk, and men are at risk as well. So it's important to know that this is not just confined to women, but it's also important to say that the vast majority of cancers are not genetic. So while it's true if you have BRCA1 or BRCA2 positive, you have a much higher risk of breast cancer or ovarian cancer, the vast majority of women with either breast or ovarian cancer do not have the inherited kind. So it's still something even that for the vast majority of women, it's not going to be so relevant for them, but it does really raise your risk. So the question is, who should be tested for the BRCA gene? There's a couple of factors, and they're mainly based on family history, suggesting that you could be a high risk. So that includes if you have anyone diagnosed with breast cancer in your family before age 50, someone diagnosed with breast cancer in both breasts, or diagnosed with breast and ovarian cancer. In addition, if you have multiple family members with early breast or ovarian cancer, or male breast cancer, it suggests that you may need to get genetic testing or at least talk to your doctor. Next step is, okay, somebody's positive. Do they need to have their ovaries removed? This gets to an extremely personal level of decision, and it really depends on each individual, where they are in their life, their age, if they want to have children or more children, and the age at which their relatives were diagnosed with these cancers. So there are other options, but experts and doctors really emphasize that the removal of the ovaries and fallopian tubes is really the only evidence-based way that we know that does save lives. But there are other things that people can try, but they're going to suggest that that is the best way to protect yourself. Some other options include getting testing for CA125 and vaginal ultrasounds, but the difficulty is ovarian cancer can be very difficult to catch, and it's often not caught until its late stages, which is why they recommend that this is not the most beneficial or going to catch 100% of them. There are also some options for taking oral contraceptive pills, but again, not definitive treatment. So pros and cons, the benefit of having ovaries removed if you are in this risk group of BRCA 1 or 2 is that it's going to drop your risk of ovarian cancer by 80% and breast cancer by 50%. It doesn't eliminate it altogether, but it really does drop it. Downside is somebody is going to go through a sudden and immediate menopause, which can be extremely difficult. Now, they can take hormone replacement therapy, but the reality is that no medical therapy is going to replace what our body can create, and we still don't know the potential impact of taking that kind of hormone pills for years and years. So it remains to be seen. I really wish that the answers were simpler, but the reality is, you know, like everything with our health, you have to weigh the risks and the benefits, your own health history, and your own health goals. So I'm sure we'll be continuing to hear more, but I really wanted to give everybody a background on that. Moving on to another story, talking about kind of a breakfast of champions for diabetics. So we all know, we've talked about it before, the rise of obesity in our modern society has led to an alarming rise in the incidence of diabetes. And over 382 million people on the planet suffer from diabetes, and most of those are type 2. Now, for those people, they often have blood sugar spikes, usually after a meal. And in some people, that can be very dangerous and lead to cardiovascular complications. So there was a new study that from Tel Aviv that looked at meal timing and when we eat our calories. And they said that to suppress glucose high surges throughout the day, consider eating more of your calories at breakfast and a more modest dinner. And apparently that led to more balanced glucose levels throughout the day. So somebody who's diabetic or pre-diabetes may want to consider, as part of their other lifestyle changes, really modifying when you're eating your foods in your large meals. A second thing that's related to the obesity epidemic is atrial fibrillation. As an ER doctor, I see many patients coming in with new-onset atrial fibrillation. And according to a new study from the American College of Cardiology, they found that weight loss can reduce the recurrence of AFib. And that means that you have less likely to have to take blood thinners or medications to control your heart rate. They said obese patients with AFib who lost at least 10% of their body weight were 6 times more likely to achieve long-term freedom from atrial fibrillation compared to those who didn't lose weight. So again, a really great thing. Atrial fibrillation can really be a problem because people have to be on long-standing blood thinners, other medications to control their heart rate. So great to know that, again, by losing weight, you can potentially get your atrial fibrillation under control. Just another tool to do. Talk to your doctors, of course, but a really great option. Now, this was a fun study that I read about, and that was about the role of laughter. So a study at University of College London in the UK, published in Human Nature, found that sharing a good laugh makes people more willing to tell others something personal about themselves. Apparently, the act of just verbally opening up to someone was a crucial building block to forming new relationships. And they found that sometimes they'll share very highly sensitive content, like their religious convictions, their personal fears, or just something as superficial like their favorite type of food. So they gathered 112 students from Oxford University, and they showed them a variety of videos. They didn't talk to each other, and some made them laugh, and some just invoked positive feelings or other emotions. One video was a stand-up routine. Another was just a plain old golf instruction video. And they measured the level of laughter and the emotional state afterwards, and then had each of them write a message to another participant in the group. Now, the participants who had a good laugh together shared significantly more intimate information than the groups who didn't watch the comedy routine. Now, researchers suggest it's not just because of the positive experience, but because the physiology behind just having a good laugh triggers the release of the so-called happy hormone, or endorphins. And you've noticed this too. You have a great laugh. It just, your body feels good. So not only that, it also kind of triggers these kind of emotional relationships with strangers. So if you want to get somebody to open up to you and want to delve deeper into that relationship, share a laugh, get a good laugh together. Now, another study that has come out recently looked at the highly processed foods that we are making in our grocery purchases. And it was a nationwide study of U.S. grocery purchases and revealed that highly processed foods make up more than 60% of the calories in the food we buy. These tend to have more fat, sugar, salt than less processed foods. These researchers were out of UNC Chapel Hill, and they looked at the UPC barcodes to look at what people were buying. And they classified if it was multi-ingredient, industrial formulated. Chief culprits for highly processed foods were soda, cookies, chips, white bread, candy, prepared meals. Good options were fresh frozen fruits, milks, vegetables, milk, eggs, dried beans, fresh meats. And they looked at the convenience in distinguishing between those foods that are, ready to eat or just ready to heat and those that required cooking and a preparation. And as you would expect, they found that highly processed foods were a really stable staple of our U.S. purchasing patterns, and that people are purchasing foods higher in fat, sugar, salt on average. And that they also discussed about the need to incentivize food manufacturers to improve the nutritional quality of our products. And they said that more than 80% of the calories were purchased were in ready-to-eat, ready-to-heat, which have higher fat, sugar, and salt content. Now, really, it's something to look at because we have to look at the importance of convenience and the recognizing the difference in home cooked versus buy. Really look, when you go to the store, look at those pre-prepared foods. I sometimes try to mix in. If I'm buying a pre-prepared food like a roasted chicken or something else, I try to make sure that I mix in something that isn't, such like a salad or vegetables, so I can get some more nutrition for my family. So there you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for the week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter and my handle at Dr. Daria. You're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for listening in and stay well.